And welcome to another Round the Rotary podcast with me, your host, JP Warren. And thank you everyone for tuning in. And hope everyone's having a pretty good day, morning, whatever it is, whenever you're listening to this. And before we get kicked off, I got to say that Round the Rotary podcast is brought to you by Capital Petroleum Consultants. CPC specializes in project engineering, well site supervision, and all disciplines of the oil and gas industry. Contact us through www.capitalpetroleumconsultants.com to see what CPC can do for you today. Like that?
I like that.
You got a podcast voice?
We're fixing to find out. I definitely got a face for a podcast, so you can't see it, right? I guess we are.
Oh,
now.
We're recording.
Oh, we're okay.
Oh yeah, we're recording. Yeah, we got video and audio on.
All right.
So for those of you that aren't really sure on who's in the studio with us, why don't you just chime us in who you are and your title and who you with?
Yeah, my name is Chief Tozan. I work for Ranger Energy Services, and I am the Vice President of Sales for all of our entities here at Ranger, and been in the business about 20 years.
Well, I'm glad you stopped by. So we actually originally planned to do this in the summer.
We were. My wife unfortunately got the Rona back in the summer, so we had to kind of.
And you did you did you catch it?
I didn't. I tested negative.
Okay.
And they're like, you need to quarantine for 10 days, and I was like, I don't think so.
I'm good.
I'm good. I'm not staying in the house with her for 10 straight days.
But you have to because you talk to someone on the phone with COVID.
That's right. Yeah. So I went to the golf course and social distance there. Right.
Did you improve your score at all?
Well, my handicap's gotten a little better.
Really?
Yeah, it's got.
You know what's funny? It's like, you know, during COVID and all that stuff, you're talking to all our buddies and all that stuff, and you know, some people just wind up at the house. Some people start boozing a little bit early. Yeah. Some people start doing this, and then some people start getting out and playing golf.
That's right. I was fortunate. My office, I've got an executive workspace, which is a normal office setting in Fort Worth, but Ranger's based out of Houston. But I had an office in downtown, and it's really. I got a lawyer next door to me. I got another oil field hand, Richard Thurston, who's down the hall. Unfortunately, used to be a lot of C&J hands down the road, but
yeah,
no bueno there. Yeah. So we know what's going on in the industry, just sign of the times. But I always had a place to go. I got two young toddlers at home, a 5- and a 6-year-old.
Okay.
So I was able to escape and breathe a little bit. So,
dude, I was talking, I had a lunch yesterday with a buddy of mine. He got 183 rounds, and the funny part is, though, that's not even the highest number that I've heard.
Right.
There's a couple cats out there that have gotten over 200 plus rounds.
No, I know customers that have 100 plus rounds. Right. I mean,
so it was great for the golf industry.
It is. It really was. Everybody's like, man, you must be getting really good at golf. I was like, well, until I take a lesson.
What else?
If I keep doing the bad stuff, bad habits, nothing's changed.
But what else are you going to do during those times? I mean, it's either you're going to woodwork. I'm not a woodworker. I'm not a gardener. I mean, you got to do something.
Yeah, definitely not a woodworker or gardener. A lot of things I didn't want to be when I was growing up. Marathon runner, I wasn't going to be that. I know that.
No,
But no, it was a strange year. You know, I'm a very social guy for those that know me and like to be out and about. And my whole career, I've always traveled 2 or 3 days a week, right?
Right.
For the companies that I've worked for. But, you know, for about the first 3 months, there was a time that you kind of had to adapt a little bit and figure out what in the hell are we going to, you know, how are we going to handle this? Nobody's offices were open. People weren't going to their office.
No.
So it was all phone calls and emails, right?
It's still kind of like that.
I mean, you were dialing for dollars and trying and watching the price of oil go to hell in a handbasket and rigs coming in and
world shutting down.
The world shutting down, coming to an end, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, I keep going back there, like, how you been handling customers? At first, like I said, first 3 or 4 months, it was dialing for dollars. And some people would call you back, some people wouldn't. The ones that would, I finally figured it out. If I have their cell phone in my phone, then more than likely mine's in theirs.
Yep.
So they were always pretty receptive to that, that or even emails, right? So for me, and I think probably most, I really leaned on the relationships I had in the business. And that's what's literally carried Ranger back to above the board, so to speak, compared to where we were on the bottom.
But that was the important part about, you know, relationships. People are talking about, you know, networks and all that. Yeah. And I think that's obviously it's crucial. But I mean, during that time when things were hit hard and you know, things shut down, you stopped seeing people, whether it's breakfast runs, office visits, whatever that was. If you didn't have those relationships and you didn't have that network, then I felt you were behind the times, and it was an uphill battle.
No, you really were. And I always wondered, man, it's like some of these guys, newer folks into the industry or may not have been around as long. And you know, how are these guys, how are they going to handle this whole environment that we're in now? Because you can't build it's hard enough as it is to build relationships in this industry. And it's even particularly harder to do it in that type of environment, yeah. right? So you got to have be very self-motivated, and you have to be really disciplined. We all have the good days and the bad days going, what am I going to do today? And it gets pretty redundant.
It gets kind of monotonous.
I mean, it's just almost ground. I told somebody the other day, man, it's like Groundhog Day, man. Yeah. And, you know, it's some days just – some weeks go by quicker than others, but you got to find a way to kill time. I found a lot – I finally figured out I went and got a golf membership and played a lot of golf, started playing a lot of golf, and customers were very receptive to that.
I mean,
that was probably about summertime when everybody –
you can get your own cart. You can do social
– you can social distance, and it's been great for me. That's the way it's worked. A lot of coffees outside of the office or lunches perhaps it's just been a different way of doing things. I've been accustomed in my career from a social aspect. That's the way majority of my career has gone in building relationships has not been between the 8 to 5, so to speak.
Right.
Professionally, yes. But the true tried and true relationships that you build with people have been after 5 or
you're right.
Some cases after 3 o'clock.
There you go.
Or
there you
maybe
go.
After lunch. You
know, we got to get it there.
Or the weekend.
You got to get there at 3 o'clock to wait till traffic dies
That's
down.
Right.
Till 7.
That's right. That's exactly right.
So, man, why don't you give us a little a quick background on yourself, kind of where you've been, first generation, second, third generation oil field, and kind of bring us to speed, kind of where you're at today at Ranger Energy Services.
Sure. Yeah. So I am second generation. My dad, Johnny Tozan, he had a 30-year career at Amoco,
okay.
production company, and he took his early retirement before the whole BP acquisition, if you will, and he went on and took a few years off, went to work for H&P and helped those guys out, but also had an uncle in the industry on the service side, Ricky Tozan,
okay.
And he spent his career mainly on the fishing tool side of the business, so I had two great role models, so to speak.
Did you want to get in the oil field?
You know, when I was in college, I wasn't – I definitely – it's like Mike Moore told me one time. He's like, yeah, my oldest boy, he graduated magna cum laude, and the other one graduated oh, good lordy. So that was me. So I was on probation most of my college career at Louisiana Tech. However, at the time in the late 90s, I got out of Tech in 99, but in the late 90s, the industry wasn't very stable. There wasn't a lot going on. It wasn't very favorable.
So what'd you go to school to study?
Well, I was in ag business.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
General business, agricultural business degree, right? And so my dad's like, when I got out, he's like, I'd prefer you not do it, because he saw the trials and tribulations of what my uncle went through on the service side, right. And obviously him knowing a lot of people, what was going on in the late 90s, right? So he's like, I don't have an engineering degree,
right.
So you need to try to probably find something outside of the industry. So I did, actually. I went to work for Rush Equipment and John Deere, yellow iron dealer, for about a year or so.
What were you doing there?
I was just doing sales, work behind parts desk, stuff like that. It paid good.
Yeah.
I mean, out of college, it paid better than other places.
So did you always want to get in sales, or is that just kind of
I think it fit my personality. You know, to be honest with you, and you may laugh at this, I growing up, I was always pretty – I wasn't real outgoing, honestly. I was always pretty shy.
Dude,
you can believe that.
So I asked my dad the comparison between, my daughter and me, and he's like, well, you were a lot more shy. Me?
Oh, I was very reserved. I think probably what changed my whole personality or confidence in being able to talk to strangers, when I went to Louisiana Tech, I lived with my grandparents on our farm up there. So, and I commuted every day.
All right.
And it's feed cows, play golf, go to school. But I went into an environment where I knew no one, right? And in playing golf then in college, I walked into a place where I didn't know anybody. So I was forced to start have small talk conversations with just total strangers, right? And they knew some of my kinfolks there, but it definitely, that's kind of when I probably had to come out of my shell a little bit, I think. I was forced to, honestly. And that kind of led me down that path. Even when I was at Rush, answering phones every day they're a yellow iron dealer, John Deere yellow iron dealer, were then. But a lot of phone conversations, right? Constant. And you start building more and more confidence with talking to complete strangers, right? And then you ultimately develop relationships with those guys just as well as you would any other sales role. Right?
What was your perception, I guess, of the oil field, I guess, growing up when you're your dad and your uncle? And what was your, I guess, perception?
For my dad, I didn't really we were very fortunate to go on a lot of great hunting trips, fishing trips, et cetera, and I have great memories of doing that. I had my uncle was probably my role model, and anybody that knows Ricky and the oil field life he lived back in the day. You know, he was my role model, right? I was telling you earlier, I've got a picture of myself and when I was probably 4 or 5 years old, set of red coveralls, overalls, boots, had my Frank's Case and Crew hat. Craig Corbell Sr., rest in peace, actually was a vendor of my dad's at the time. And do you know Craig Sr.?
Isn't it amazing, kind of like the generational, like, just like, you know, like, oh, this is, you know, my dad, this was his dad. And it's just kind of like, it's kind of cool how the Oldfield family has kind of grown up and kind of shaped into kind of the same relationships.
No, it really has. You know, my dad was very instrumental in my career, particularly in the beginning.
Yeah.
From a relationship point, you know. After I left Rush, I went to a little small consulting firm called Luco, actually, between there and my time before going to
Tesla. What did Luco do?
Luco is pretty much just what you're doing today.
So you went to a competitor. So we don't have to talk about Luco.
Let's keep going.
We don't discuss competition.
Sorry about that. So that was a short period of time. Had a great opportunity there. I did get into the oil field there. Paid more money. That's what I was doing. I was 22, three years old out of college. Sorry about that earlier. But anyway, got an opportunity with Tesco, and that's really where I got to spread my wings a bit. But circling back to the influence through those relationships, my father's reputation, if you will, or last name between him and my uncle, quite frankly, opened up a lot of doors and opportunities, for me at that time, and very grateful for that. However, back, you know, I call it turn of the century. When I was in sales in Houston at Tesco, it was all gray hairs, right?
Right.
I mean, I bet there wasn't 10 salesmen under the age of 40 then, right?
All of Houston.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you wanted to go interact with a younger customer, you had to go to ExxonMobil on the 13th floor, and that's where they had supply chain and some of these young drilling engineers, their training, whatever they were doing at the time, right?
Was that generation, I guess, when you got in the oil field, when you moved to Houston, first got into sales, I guess your first proper oil field sales role.
Yeah.
Was the older generation, just because kind of what got hit in the 90s and no one really was an attractive industry or
what? Yeah, 80s, 90s. I think there was, you didn't have the engineers. They weren't doing that in college, right? They definitely weren't studying petroleum engineering. There wasn't a lot of engineers coming out. A lot of schools, even like Louisiana Tech, had gotten rid of their engineering,
I actually lived with a petroleum engineer my last year at A&M, and I think his graduating class was like, I don't know, but I feel like it was like 12 or like 5 or something like that. Now it's tremendous.
Oh, yeah, no doubt, right? I mean, obviously everybody's chasing the money, too. They know what the potential is there to do that, especially in the, you know, let's call it 2009 to 15, right? It's kind of when the crew change happened, if you will, right? But back then, I mean, the only way you networked, it was very difficult for me to form relationships with guys that were 30 years older than me, 40 years older than me, you know? So for me, at the time, you know, you're going to AAD luncheons, IEDC luncheons, SPE luncheons, maybe a clay shooter cooking at a golf tournament here and there. But in those environments, you'd go in there and you'd sit down at the petroleum club at a table, and it's complete strangers, right? So you're forced to have conversations, but it allowed you to build a network at the same time. Sometimes you'd be at a table with two operators or one, and maybe you may be at a table with all service hands.
Right.
And
now there's financial advisors.
Yeah. Then now there's finance, a lot of suits in there, right? Financial advisors.
You start talking to someone, chiming into someone about 30 minutes, get that relationship going. It's like, hey, let me get your card. You're like, let me get your card. Oh, you're a financial advisor. Son of a bitch.
Yeah, exactly, right? So it was just a different time and place, you know? And then very fortunate after I left Tesco, which is a great foundation for me. We did a lot of great things there technology-wise, which kind of molded the way I look at the industry as a whole technology-wise. And thinking outside the box, they did a great job of doing that. Mike Tassari's dad, actually, Bob. So,
who just no big deal, but he just passed 500 downloads on Around the Rotary, the largest download episode yet. Yeah, but he was one of the first.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
He was one of the first ones.
I knew Mike when he was in college, right?
So, really?
Oh yeah, he was a little. I'm not going to give him a description. He was a little heavier than he is now.
Oh, right? He showed me pictures.
When he was in college, he was in a band and all that stuff right there. But I'd walk back in the shop and there'd be Mike back there, you know, smoking a heater or something, you know what I mean?
Back in the day.
Good dude, though, man.
And he's one of the best out there.
He really is. And it formed a great relationship there. His dad's a great man and pioneered a lot of great technology for the industry. And I was glad to be a part of it because it's essentially like air conditioning now, right?
Right.
Top drive.
So you enjoyed, I guess. I mean, you're kind of the the younger generation stepped in. I mean, there's no other one kind of on your age demographic or anything like that. So, I mean, did you enjoy sales? I mean, what was it like for you, I guess?
You know, I did. I enjoyed it. I've always engaged myself in being very close with the operations side of things. I enjoyed the sales part of it and building relationships, talking to people. And, you know, I'm very competitive by nature anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, throughout my career, whether it was working for myself at Chief Oil Tools, wherever it was, I always had a lot of ambition to be competitive, and that got me out of bed every morning, right? Once you kind of taste that, get a taste of any type of success, I feed off of that type of stuff just like anybody would.
Right.
It feels good.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, it feels good.
It feels like you're doing something right and it's working and you get the momentum.
And then once you figure out what works for you, then it just... You keep doing it. It's repetitive, right?
Right.
And you take some things along the way, though, that you have to adapt to. You know, the industry, like in 07, 08, when I owned my own deal, Chief Oil Tools, I came. A lot of that work was done and sold at the field level, which I love the field. I love going to the field. But I came back to Houston to work for Stallion.
Yeah.
And that was turned out to be a great move for me. But at that time, that's kind of when that crew change occurred, right? And a lot of young guys showed up, and I guess I would have been, let's do the math here. I'm 44 today, however old I was, 2008.
So that was kind of when, I guess, that's when our mutual, I guess, contacts and friends. Because I think in the oil, I got in the oil industry in 2005, but I was doing HR, then HSC, then, you know, I didn't get into marketing and sales until 2011.
Right. So 7, 8, everybody showed up, you know, a lot of younger guys. And I had obviously had a lot in common with those guys. And man, it was, you know, barring the banks collapsing in 08, 09, the industry took a dip, but luckily it turned around fairly quick. But it was a lot of fun. Oil ramped up, you know, all the way to what, $120, $40 a barrel. It was just a really it'll never be the same. And I definitely missed the days of, you know, nobody was at the time, you know, nobody was married. Nobody had kids.
Didn't have any home to.
Quite frankly, didn't have any responsibilities of significance other than to stay employed.
Yeah.
And back then, at $140 oil, it's pretty easy to do, right? You wake up, right? That's all you got to do, you know.
That's the playbook.
You wake up. But we got to develop a lot of relationships, man, and it was the best time of my career, and developed relationships and friendships, not only with other sales guys, but customers that'll just last a lifetime. And that's what I love about our industry. That's probably the most unique about any other industry or business out there, the relationships that you take and the network you build, and how small a world it really is. Kind of like I was telling you about the time when I went to Pennsylvania, early part of the...
Well, tell that story. I mean, tell that story. I've heard it, but our listeners haven't.
Yeah, so 2002, 2003, something like that, we went up to the Northeast. This was before the Marcellus Shale, right?
Right.
And we went up there to put some equipment to drill coal bed methane seams, horizontal wells, lateral wells. And so anyway, we go up there, we're meeting with one of the drilling contractors up there, and we're going around the table introducing ourselves. And we get done, and the guy stops. He goes, "Man, I got a question for you." He goes, "What'd you say your last name was?" I said, "Tozan." He goes, "Man," he just kind of sat there for a minute. He goes, "Do you know Johnny?" And I'm like, we're in Uniontown, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, whatever state it was. I'd never been there before. I know that. And I was like, "Yes, sir, that's my father." And I'm like... He goes, "Did he work for Amoco?" I said, "Yes, sir, he did." And he goes, "Man," he goes, "talk about a small world." He goes, "I was a derrick hand for your father. I think it was Delta Drilling or something like that. I wasn't even born, right? They drilled the deepest vertical well in Pennsylvania at that time.
Yeah.
I guess 19,000 feet or maybe even longer. I was blown away, right? It's crazy.
But that just kind of shows you, it's like, you know, in our industry, obviously it's the relationships that matter, but it's also the name. You know what I mean? Your name is probably one of the most important things in our industry, because our industry talks, you know, it's you got to put a good name out there for yourself. And the fact that, you know, your dad's name stuck with this guy for X number of years and you walk in the office.
Yeah. You know, you got to make an impression, right? And going back to some of that, you know, I also wanted to create my own identity too, you know, you kind of get caught in some of the shadows in that, which you're grateful for,
Well, when did you realize you kind of had to create your own identity or kind of do your own thing? Because, I mean, a lot of people think they can hinge their hat on, oh, this, you know, my dad did this, my mom did this, my dad did that. So when did you kind of realize, like, okay, it's time for me to kind of branch out? It's kind of time for me to make my own path.
Yeah, I would say it's probably 2 or 3 years in. You know, throughout the process of everybody's career, you're going to always have those places where you're growing up, right? Especially when you're starting out and working and paying bills. But and trying to find your way in the world, and you lean on those, and you really don't even know how to lean on them, so all you have is your name, right? But I would probably say 2003 or 2004, when you finally catch your stride, and that's when I had enough confidence to go on and do my own thing too, right?
Right.
And then probably even more so, created a brand for myself, I feel, anyway, was probably around the time of the crew change, just because you had all those relationships to create that, you know, so I would probably say full bore, I probably finally caught my stride 8, 7, 8, I would think.
And so what did that look like?
As far as...
I guess finding your own stride. I mean, was that just kind of, you kind of get your own groove?
Yeah, I think it's just, you get in your own groove, you build confidence. I think it's right. Everything's about timing in this life, right? And it's where you're at, time, place, who you work for, what kind of culture they have. How do you fit into that? You know, when I went to work over at Stallion, I was, after I'd sold my equipment for at Chief Oil Tools, I had a lot of opportunities, right, to go work for various companies, but I wanted to make sure it was the right fit for me and that I could impact their business the day I walked in the door or before I walked in the door, quite frankly. You know, once you say, okay, you're coming to work, you're going to start January 1, I had jobs sold before I even walked in the door, right? So just say, pick up the phone, you know. And also, I felt like I could really lean on my relationships, and it was going to be a good fit for me. And I was able to do really well there. It was a great move for me.
You spoke about before we started kind of recording, getting behind the mic. You spoke about, you know, you went in Stallion and kind of built a team there, and you know, big shoes to fill. I mean, you were there before Mike Moore.
I was.
He's one of the best guys out there.
He really is. I consider him one of my dear friends and mentors.
So you come in and you got to build this team. What did that look like for you? This is the first team you built, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I inherited some of the people. We had a lot of great guys there, and I've always been been attracted to a lot of the elder statesmen of the business, so to speak. And we had some elderly guys that I personally leaned on and learned a lot from, because it was kind of a new role for me too and responsibility. But one thing that I really really liked was I was able to hire some young guys, you know, like Spitzenberger, Greg Spitzenberger, came bringing him over there, Gabe Jackson, who's been on here before.
Oh yeah,
you know, it was one of those things where if I saw guys out where I was at, because I knew what I was doing, I knew what my habits were and where I was going, those were the kind of the guys that I picked. It was like, man, this guy's he's getting it right, and he's working hard, he's playing hard.
So it wasn't one of those things where people are like, you know, sending you resumes. If anything, you were actually out there, you know, boots on the ground, you're noticing people's work ethic. You're watching too.
Oh yeah, definitely paying attention to that. And you know, it really worked out. And those guys, it's all about hustle and work ethic. I've always said, you know, unfortunately, it's not that hard to outwork an oil field salesman, quite frankly, right? I've always been one to, you know, obviously this environment's a little bit different, is to stay engaged in the operations and be at the office or around that operation engaged, whether I had appointments or not, right? All the way to 5 o'clock, you know, for the most part. And I always encourage those guys to do that, because I think you build a pretty good rapport with those folks.
Because oftentimes there's always
great opportunities.
Because oftentimes, you know, it's always the age-old sales versus operations versus sales. You know, it's like you're on the same team, but you're also you're trying to, you know, push your own agenda, whatever that looks like. Right. So I think establishing those relationships, not just with the customers or salespeople, but just as you were saying, the operations, the 360 relationships.
No, that's very important, right? I think I learned for some reason, you know, I adapted that mentality a long time ago. You know, probably just from the lack of knowledge, quite frankly, you know, to be able to learn and inject myself into the conversation, even if I was just listening.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it was, you seem to develop, it's just like anything else with a customer, where I think a lot of people may fail, or sales guys may falter, is not building a relationship with your operations guys, or a building trust or a rapport with those guys, right?
Right.
So they would lean on me just as much as I would lean on them, you know, at the end of the day. And I think that's a lot what's missing, not only even at the sales level, but also just the world we live in today and the models that are out there, you know, service company wise, right?
Well, we're going to get into that. I want to finish the background, then let's talk about this, the models that we're sure. seeing, that we saw in the past, that we're kind of, that might we might see in the future. Yep. So you're at Stallion, you're building this team, you got these young cats that you've noticed that are hustling out there working. Sorry about that. That are out there working and hustling.
Yep.
So you enjoying that?
Yeah.
You're enjoying the team being successful, and then.
Yeah, I think building that, you kind of see guys grow, right, and kind of catch their stride, and you try to guide them the best you can and give them advice, the best that you know how, that you think is the right way to do it, right or wrong. Everybody's got their own will, but you know, you kind of have to have a little bit of emotional intelligence, if you will. You know what I mean? To kind of learn what's going to. How people are going, what's going to motivate those guys, right?
Right.
How are you going to get the most out of those people? And I've really enjoyed that, not only there, but even when I came to Ranger, went into an operations role. I was in sales, VP of sales, and then got to go move to Fort Worth and be a VP of Mid-Continent. And
so your entire career was sales before this?
It was all sales before, yeah.
But because of your ability and want to learn and have relationships with the operational team, and all, that's how you kind of got this position to go into operations.
Yeah, so we had acquired a company, and I was kind of part of the integration by, I would say, even default for the most part, because I'd gone up there in a sales role, just introduced myself, hey, can I help, whatever, blah, 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 and then they asked me to move into that role because I'd kind of built a rapport there. So we went up there, had to make some, you know, obviously decisions to build the business and change the culture coming from a smaller family-owned business all the way into the corporate world, what is a publicly traded company in Ranger. But you got to really influence those people to change that. I mean, we're talking about, you know, even just introducing laptops to some of these guys, right, on how to e-tickets, everything like that. But you had to be real influential, and that was the most fulfilling part for me, is not only changing the culture, but trying to create a pathway for people to have a career.
And if people see that you actually care and that you want to do this, because a lot of times after an acquisition or after a merger or something like that, there's always the culture clash. And there's always it's a different culture that's being acquired. And then the ones that are acquired, they hate change. They're thinking, oh, they're going to come here. My job's going to be now. It's going to be completely lost. There might be some, if you don't successfully engage and change the culture the right way, there might actually be the point where it's actually sabotaging.
No, there's no doubt about it. And you got to be real careful with that, right? But I think the most important thing is really listen to your people, no different than you listen to your customers.
Right.
You know, the internal challenges are a lot harder than any external challenges with your customers may ever be, right?
And I mean, because if your house isn't in order, then you can't deliver the product that you want.
It's going to be in disarray. But I've really enjoyed my time where I'm at now and being able to mold people and kind of influence, I wouldn't say their life, but their livelihood, and create that sustainability there. Obviously, 2020 made it difficult for a lot of people, so which is unfortunate. But it's been good, man. It really has. Been very fortunate and blessed and enjoy what I do every day and being around people, and look forward to the doors opening a little bit.
So you were in operations. You went up there and kind of had a successful culture change implementation, whatever you want to call it. So when did you guys get back into sales?
Yeah, so they moved me back into sales back in January of 2020. They're like, come back in. Let's go build a. Pretty recent, right?
Yeah.
So let's come back. Let's build a team, because we didn't really have a big group. So let's go build a team. Got one guy into it, and then COVID hits, right?
God.
So
but that's something you can't. I mean, no one planned for that.
No one planned for that. No. So but it's all good.
So let's talk about this. Let's talk about kind of this the world we're living in today. We got a couple good points that we discussed before to kind of jot it down, all this stuff. And we were discussing, I guess, the previous model in the oil and gas industry, right? Whether it's the executives not being informed, making the wrong decisions, you know, patting themselves, whatever that looks like, or loans being extended for companies that are not making any profit, not making any money.
Right.
So how are they still in business? So
yeah.
Let's talk about the old model and kind of what how it's broken and kind of what how you see it, I guess, fixed, or the new model, I guess, emerging.
Yeah, I think moving forward, everybody's got to be, be fairly lean. I think the old model, I mean, if you look at it through the consolidation of the businesses over the years, that has created a lot of that problem too, though, right? And they're making those acquisitions when oil is $100 and everybody $100 a barrel, or gas is $8, whatever it is. But, you know, one, you're paying a premium in the good times for something that, quite frankly, you know,
times only have to get better for you to.
I mean, people make money in spite of themselves, right? When times are good,
right.
And people are paying premiums for that too. So obviously, they're taking on heavy debt loads, et cetera, et cetera. But at the same time, they're creating these layers upon layers of, you know, management groups. And then you look at the boardroom, and you got private equity guys in there. No offense, but you got private equity guys that, I get it, they have to have a seat at the table. And then, with all due respect, you've got a lot of guys that their time is so, you know, let's so-called past,
right.
I guess, that have been out, not engaged in the industry for 15, 20 years, and they're playing armchair quarterback, and then you got a CEO's trying to cover his butt, getting smoke blown up him from the 10 different layers below him, right?
We just talked about that.
And they're trying to save their job, right?
Yep.
And it's just uninformed decisions, right? And your employees suffer below, everybody else below that suffers, right?
But that's what you talked about, having relationships and listening. I mean, if you get some of those older people at the table, or you get some private equity people, or the CEO, you need to have those relationships. So there are those. So first off, you understand what's going on.
Yeah, you get rid of the layers, really. It's more about engagement, employment engagement. And I really feel like a lot of operators want that, I would hate to call it boutique type of feel, but the quicker you can make decisions, the more efficient you're going to be able to be,
right.
Especially if it's the right decisions. And that's what operators want it to feel like, versus having to go buy a car. Well, let me go talk to my manager. You go back and forth.
Let me talk to the finance guy.
We could have done this 5 hours ago.
I know.
Right?
That's the worst part. It's the length of a decision being made.
Yeah, I think that's what's missing in a lot of places, and it's probably to their own failures, that their own demise, that people just aren't engaged, right? And that's got to start at the highest level, to be engaged and have conversations to help understand what's going on in their world.
And if anything, this day and age, conversations are more important, because people have gotten very comfortable behind a computer, behind a screen.
Oh yeah,
right now, and it's one of those things. You know, 2020, obviously, people are taking a break. They're at their house. They're not having those face to face conversations, and then the phone conversations kind of start dropping too.
Sure.
So we'll just do email. We'll just do LinkedIn and all that stuff. So these conversations, I mean, now more than ever, it's crucial to kind of set things right, get back on the right track. So what do you kind of see the new – like, do you see this changing at all, though?
I really don't see it changing that drastically. It's never going to be what it was, right? I mean, I think that's the reality.
No, I'm talking about the new model.
Oh, the new model. I think there's some people out there that are adjusting to that.
Yeah.
I think 2020 has forced them to do that. Now – it's always the overcorrection, just like anything else. In this business, there's always overcorrections one way or the other.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So
very knee-jerk.
Are people, more than likely, most companies today, with what they have, I mean, outside of probably your bigger operators, but particularly service companies, outside of your labor in your field, I would think that most of what they have in place today, they should be able to sustain that for what the industry is going to look like in 5 years, right? This industry just keeps getting smaller and smaller
smaller.
I mean, you look at the 80s, 4,000 or 5,000 drilling rigs. Look at the 90s, that's get squeezed. You get into 2000s, let's say 2008, the rig count gets cut. There was 2,000 rigs running then. All the way to 15. Now there was 1,100, and then we go back into 2020, then now there's 400. I don't see how a lot of that's driven on efficiencies too.
Efficiencies,
and
technology,
commodity prices help that all in all. But the technology that's out there today, the way wells are drilled now is essentially assembly line, right? I mean, they're just dum, 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 manufacturing, I guess, is probably the better way to do it or to say it. But it's going to continue to get smaller. I mean, it just is, and history's proven that. And with the way things are today. Not to get into politics, but the way things are today, it's going to continue to get smaller, right?
Why? Because of politics.
Well,
we can
the
get
regulations.
Into it a little bit.
Yeah, what they're striving for. However, I've always been pretty bullish on gas, right?
Yep,
Natural gas is something I've been pretty bullish on myself personally, and that's just from kind of seeing what's going on in the world and around the country. On how it's ultimately the bridge, this is my opinion, but I think it's the bridge to what, let's call it the federal government, what they ultimately want to
What the narrative?
What the narrative is, right, or what they think they can achieve, but it's not going anywhere, right? But
that's the thing that we
this could definitely going to be the bridge. But until they say something that and identify that at that level and say, and why I don't know why they I know why they don't want to say it, but that's what's going to have to happen to help move that market, right, or that commodity.
But let's talk about that. You and I had a kind of interesting conversation about this. The whole fossil fuels, renewables. We kind of got into that, and that's you had a great point. I mean, you discussed the bridge. I mean, there. I guess the way people want to view it today is that if we had the choice, we could just flip a switch and go all renewables.
Oh,
but
yeah.
It's not reality. No. There needs to be infrastructure. There needs to be technology. There needs to be a way to capture the energy. So that being said, I mean, there needs to be a bridge from where we're at today to kind of where that looks like.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it. And that's why I say natural gas is probably the cleanest, most affordable form of renewable energy out there. I'm not opposed to having other pieces of it. You're going to have everybody in the room on the same page and recognize that
we're all providing energy.
That we're all doing it right.
I mean, there's pros and cons of this one, pros and cons of this one, pros and cons. So it's one of those things. Let's not attack, the oil and gas industry. We're at the table. There's no two tables.
In the oil and gas industry, it seems like you're always on the defensive, right?
Yes.
For the most part. Yeah, in Texas, maybe not so much. But
we just watched that Bigfoot family.
You can't run from it, right?
Yeah, I just showed a chief a little 4-minute clip that I got from this movie called Bigfoot Family on Netflix. I was watching with my daughter and wife the other weekend. And there was nothing subtle about how the oil and the gas is evil. There was nothing. Yeah. There wasn't like read between the lines.
Yeah, I think I know the industry as a whole. I don't say we got to do a better job, but it's just it's uninformed, right?
Right.
I think, and I know I've heard people say we've got to do a better job of educating people that view the world or the industry as what we saw in a bad way, environmentally, whatever the case may be, but. But the same token, are you going to get them to actually listen? They've already got They've already made up their mind, and it's just in one ear, out the other, right? And it's just blank stares, and it's a challenge, man.
Well, that's the thing that we were watching. I was showing you that clip and all that stuff, and that CEO of that the extract oil company or whatever on Bigfoot thing, he was saying like, zero footprint. Da-da-da. He was saying all the right things.
Right.
Then once the cameras are off, then he switched. So it's one of those things. If you are sitting with someone having those conversations, and you do leave the room, or you're speaking to a class of kids and all that stuff, and you leave the room, they're thinking, okay, well, he just said exactly the same thing that this villain said in this kids movie. So
that's right.
I don't believe him.
Yeah, it's the way the world is today, just socially, the way it's interact, the way social media, whatever you want to call the narratives by different news outlets, if you will, even, and then you throw politics in the middle of it. It's
a shitstorm.
It's a dumpster fire.
Right? It really is. And the thing is, though, is it's just as you were saying that you enjoy these conversations that conflicting conversations.
Yeah.
You enjoy
these
discussions.
Yeah. No, I definitely do. I mean, look, I'm not going to take any offense to it. I don't mind defending my ground on it for sure, but I'm not opposed to hearing somebody out, right? The older I've gotten, my wife's going to disagree with me about this, but I've gotten better at listening and being a little more patient and a little more understanding for other people's views. But hey, man, they got to do the same thing,
But again, we live in a society where you got to choose which side you're on.
Yeah,
but there's a middle ground there.
Yeah, there's lines drawn in the sand, right? There's no compromise. There's no gray area, right?
Right.
And it's just going to continue to be a bigger challenge as they move, I say they, as the narrative, if you will, from a regulatory standpoint is going to continue to get more pressure on it, right? Or our industry is going to continue to see that.
We're going to get a lot more heat, and it's going to continue. I mean, Jim, I read something from Dan Pickering that Jim Cramer, I guess, said, it's the end of oil, EVs and all this stuff. It's like, where are you going to get the
electricity?
Where are you going to get that from?
Yeah, that's the whole mystery.
There's a huge perception. There's a huge disconnect, and shame on them and shame on us.
I mean, no, it is. It is. And that's why I say, how do we get out and get it in front of those people that do oppose or look at it like that?
Easy.
Right?
Get out of our industry bubble. Get out there and make a friend. Be friends with a liberal or someone that would oppose.
Yeah, the thing about it today is if they, the world we live in, unfortunately, you disagree, or if they disagree with your views, then.
Oh, they're an idiot, they're a cuck, they're this or that. It's like, man, if you can disagree about whether it's a sport team or something like that and still be friends after, I mean, you should be having it. And that's the thing, like, let's get out of the bubble and actually make, you know, communicate with people outside of our industry.
That's right.
You know, make friends, make friends with them.
No, I agree. I think there's some organizations that are trying to do that too, though, right?
Yeah.
And there's definitely plenty of them out there. We probably obviously need a bit more of them. And, you know, it's kind of like I was saying earlier, I think probably Generation X, whether it's in the oil and gas industry or just as a whole, you know, there's kind of a gap there, right, from a representation and being out in front of what's going on in our industry. And I've actually thought about doing some, even like talking to Mr. Slocum a little bit with what he's doing with his situation, and kudos to him for doing that and bringing it to the forefront. So
the abandoned orphan well,
the orphan
nonprofit
well,
that he's working on, which is huge.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think there's definitely something to that. And
he's doing a good job, getting a lot of momentum behind him. And he's it's a plan. He's attacking it, and he's promoting it the right way. So kudos, obviously.
Well, he hadn't been afraid to do it.
No, exactly.
That's the biggest part of it. He's stepping out there and
just getting into it. I kind of want to shift it to kind of talk, because you're always one of those people that has, obviously the reputation precedes them. You got a great reputation about establishing relationships and becoming friends with people and all that stuff. And I want to talk to you about that kind of. How do you let's talk about building relationships and what actual relationships are to you, in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, it's really, you know, the true relationships. I mean, professionally is one thing, right? You know, between, like I said, between 8 and 5, you go in there, with a purpose. You visit. It's mainly work initially, but you know, for me, it's really about, you know, it's cliche, but you know, getting into their personal lives. You know, I feel like you got a good relationship with somebody whenever your customer's even asking you, well, how the kid's doing, et cetera, right? Work is always the last part of the conversation.
Right.
Or if it even comes up at all, quite frankly. I was in a customer's office yesterday, and I, quite frankly, you know, obviously we couldn't cover some of their work, but I went over there solely just to talk to those.
Yeah.
I mean, because I actually got to go in an office, like their office.
What?
Right, yeah.
What?
Their office. So
that's
not going to mention any names.
That's something to turn.
They know who they are, so I'm not going to do that. But I mean, it was about an hour long of just catching up.
Well, that should
talking about the industry, talking about life, talking about, you know, obviously 2 weeks ago, Arctic blast, whatever you want to call it. But yeah, man, it's just great conversation. You can really lean on those.
To me, it's one of those things where it's like, if you're not talking work, or once you conclude work, is there going to be empty spaces and be dead air? I mean, can you fill that with actual conversation?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, even outside of that, you know, outside of 8 to 5, I'll be honest with you, I want to hang out with people that I have that type of conversation with.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. You know? Or that comfort level of to not feel any pressure to even talk about it, because they don't want it. You know what I mean? Those customers don't want to feel that pressure. That's why I say, I'd be surprised if they open any of these offices back up.
And
they're getting spoiled right now, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and I don't blame them. I always wondered, even before, even now, and it's probably worse now, how do they filter all those phone calls? How do they filter all those emails? Even though it may be a technology that they're not using.
Yeah.
And obviously, they're going to feed off maybe a network with other operators in the field. But the same token, you know, you just never know. Those guys, they got a tough road to hold to handle all of that right now. How you filter it, how you handle it, right?
But I'm talking like in the world we live in today, I mean, the relationships are built. You're right. It's not built when you're sitting there, you know, behind a computer shooting email across, or sitting there across the desk in a professional setting or anything like that. It's done outside of work. And
yeah, definitely.
I think there's a, you know, sense, you know, Kelsey Dean coming on and starting Snap, you know, you starting Crew, y'all starting Crew Change. I mean, these, and honestly, like I support AADE, I support, you know, the SBE turn, I support those industry things. But that being said, those aren't on a regular enough schedule to have those relationships.
No, you're right. You're right. Those are months apart.
Those are months apart. So I think it's important to take it upon yourself to either start something or do something that gets people out of the office. That gets people away from their desks and all that stuff. And you can engage in more of a social setting. So those relationships, I'm just like you, you know, the customers come to my, you know, 80% of my daughter's birthday party was customers, you know, 2 years ago.
Sure.
You know, and I should have expensed the thing.
Yeah.
You know? And then my wedding too, you know, I, you know, all my customers, I had a couple of customers show up, and it's great having those relationships.
No, it really is. I've been fortunate to have the same situation, and they'll be friends of mine for the rest of my life, whether I work in the oil and gas business or not.
Exactly.
Right? You know what I mean? So, and it's also one of those things where, you know, even for sales guys or, you know, calling on your customers, you know, there's some of those people that don't, there's a lot of people that just talk to their customers only when they have work.
Right? Or when they're picking up a rig.
Or when they're picking up a rig, yep, or something like, yep, that. Right? Yeah, that's not really.
That's very transparent, you though. Know. There was a buddy of mine who, you know, got a divorce and, I think, you know, I forget what year, got a divorce. And next thing you know, he's getting phone calls, you know, he got a rig, oh, yeah, he's getting phone calls. And I remember I was in his office and hit speaker and it's like, hey man, like, you know, how's the wife and all that stuff? He's like, well, got divorced 2 years ago. Like, yeah, thanks for checking in on me. Yeah. I mean, it's transparent.
No, I agree with you. And that, you know, even just simple text, you know, and obviously everybody is, has got their own lives and their, yep, daily lives and habits, and you got to make a living. But you know, it's not that difficult. If you have true relationships, true friends there, then you take the time to do it. Right? It's never as frequent as it should be.
Right.
But I think, and we all probably aren't the best at that sometimes. I mean, I'm guilty of it just as well. But you know, I do a lot, especially just driving a lot, is whenever I kind of start scrolling through and
calling people
in.
And
yeah, just checking.
And just shooting the shit. It's a, yeah, wellness check.
That's,
yeah,
right. That's,
yeah,
right.
How things going.
Yeah.
I kind of wish that you'd see like these, the when I say the younger generation, the people, I guess, who, you know, just got in sales or kind of, yeah, building their career. I kind of wish you would see more of those, whether it's Crew Change or Snap or some, yeah, another creative name. We did OPEC, you know, Old Man's,
yeah,
what was it? Oilfield People Eagerly Consuming. I mean, I remember we started, yeah, that and we had just, you know, customers coming out and it wasn't kind of an organized thing. It was like, hey, we're going to be here, show,
yeah,
up.
Yeah, no doubt. That's one thing that's missing. I'm not sure it needs to happen. I mean, there may be some, YP or whatever they have. They, yeah, may, I don't know if they do that.
They have AAD Next event, but that, yeah, but then again, that's all
once a month.
It's all sales, which is important, yeah, to have your sales network.
Definitely, no, definitely. That's one thing that you know, a lot of people don't lean. You can't do it all by yourself, right? Yeah. And that's one thing where I probably failed, even working for myself, is not. I depended on myself the whole time, and I was successful with it. However, you know, coming back into the corporate sales world, if you're going to work in Houston, you're going to have to network. You're not going to do it alone, right?
I think the bit.
Or in this industry as a whole, but especially in the city of Houston, I mean, you're
city
not.
City of Houston's a shark tank.
It is.
The most, you get more industry knowledge and you get to, I guess, expand your network more with customers by your sales buddies.
Oh, no doubt.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. Somebody knows somebody better than you do, right?
Exactly. You exactly. Know? And that's where you need to leverage your right. relationships with your sales
people. And right now, that is the only way it's going to happen, right? You know what I mean? I know for me personally, work-wise, the work we've regained off the bottom of the downturn today has been nothing but those old relationships, right? And network, for that matter, quite frankly. So now, in the environment we're in, people haven't taken the opportunity to figure out how to do that. Is there a perfect way? I don't know. But you need to take advantage of every opportunity you get, whether it's the golf tournaments that are still going on, the clay shoots that are still going on.
I mean, shit, we've done a gumbo cook outside. You know, it's like, hey, we got tables, you know, spread out, like,
oh, yeah,
swing by. Like, you just try to do what can work, you know. And if you're not certain if it's going to be very well attended or very well executed, who cares?
Just yeah, do I mean, it. We've even done sporting clay events that aren't even industry related.
Yeah,
right. You know what I mean? They're not a industry sponsored event. It's just an event.
Yeah,
it may be some local charity thing, right? But you know, that's another way to do it too, is look outside that.
So if you were getting into sales right now, or let's say you're starting off in sales right now, what would you see as having the most impact right now to, I guess, build your networks and expand, I guess, to deepen those relationships with people?
Yeah, I mean, I think right now it's obviously going to have to be something outside. Golf has been one of those things for me, as I mentioned there.
Right.
And trying to get out coffee, you know, like I said, that was probably one of the first offices I've been in a long time yesterday.
That could be a good selling point. You say, hey, look, if you don't give me the next job, then I'll just tell people that your office is open. That'd be a good selling point.
That's right.
That's always
we had the people that I could probably tell them that.
That's what I always tell people. It's like, hey, I'm like, hey, if we don't get this work, I'm gonna tell them that you're picking up two rigs and give your cell phone out.
Yeah, get ready, buddy. But no, yeah, it's man. Right now, you just got to turn over every rock and figure out what's going to fit you best, right? But right now, you're pretty limited to that, though,
yeah.
Right?
And I would actually,
you can get out. All the businesses are opening back up, so that should help. You know, in the state of Texas, they are anyway.
Wednesday, right?
Yeah, next Wednesday.
Yeah, so we're recording this on March 4th, and I guess next Wednesday, Abbott ordered everything open, no mask. So I'm looking forward to seeing, like, there's going to be the content of videos that are going to be out there between maskers and anti-maskers. It's going to be great.
Oh,
it's going to be great internet. It's going to frustrate a lot of people, but it's going to be entertaining.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's you wear your mask about 10 minutes out of the day most of the time, but it's not. It's almost become a habit, though, right?
Yeah, it kind of has. It kind of has. But, dude, there's gonna be so much conflict.
Oh yeah.
People telling people how to live.
Well, regardless of, again, not going to touch on the political side of it, but regardless of what happens, right, there's going to be a lot of that.
Which camp are you in?
Yeah, which camp are you in?
And how can I tell the other camp that they're wrong or they're an idiot or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm off the 100% opening all the businesses. That's the most important thing to me, right? It doesn't bother me one way or the other. I don't have to wear a mask, but I'll probably continue short term maybe.
I'll do it short term.
I didn't get the Rona, so I haven't, knock on wood. Haven't got it yet, so.
And that's the thing is, like, you know, you wear a mask, and I'll probably, you know, wear one too, you know, until things calm down a little
bit. I know I will.
Because here's the deal. People are like, oh, you're scared of it. It's like, no, first off, like, it's not that I'm scared of it at all. It's one of those things. It's like, I don't know if you know me. If it's allergy season, I'm out. You know what I mean? It's like, I am such a baby when I have a little bit of, not even a cold.
Yeah, you're laid up.
Yeah, I don't want to get it.
You'd rather be hungover than sick, right?
Oh, my. Well, this day and age, when I'm 40 years old, no, I don't think I'd rather be sick because I'm a baby both ways.
Yeah, I hear you.
But that's the thing, though. It's like, you're going to have all these people telling people, just, you know, just try to hold your opinion.
Yeah,
who gives
that's
a shit?
No,
who
I
gives
agree.
A shit?
I agree.
I mean, you see someone with a mask, someone with a mask, who gives a shit?
Yeah, it doesn't bother me one way.
Not at all. Not at all. But, talking about that. So, no, you had a point about kind of the business opening
could create some opportunities there from a network standpoint.
That's
right?
Okay.
That's kind of where I was going with
thank
that.
Thank you. Yeah. Go on.
No, I think it definitely does. You know, your bars, restaurants, particularly the bars probably.
Yeah.
I think that serves as an opportunity to do that or to start those back up.
I think
that may have one time. However, you know, you look back, it's the industry actually is not as social, even pre-COVID. It's not as social as it once was.
You're right.
You know what I mean? I can remember there about a 10-year stretch where it was, you had a place to go every night if you wanted it.
That's right.
I mean, you really did.
There was Tuesday Capone's. There was Tuesday Capone's.
Yeah. I'm talking an industry. It wasn't industry sponsored, well, I guess technically it was, but it wasn't like a formal event, but it was like Capone's on Tuesday, steak night at the Tavern on the Wall in West Gray, which I don't even know if it's there anymore.
It's not, it's apartment complex.
But you know, you just get in those habits of doing that. But I mean, back then it was 9 days a week, right?
Yeah, but now, this day and age, it's, I mean, people have responsibilities. People don't feel that there's a benefit.
We've gotten a little bit older, you know. I've got a little grayer. It's got a little more mileage and maybe a little more responsibility.
And maybe people don't understand the benefits of going attending these things. And, and I actually kind of would advise people, when next time you do sit down with a customer, I mean, it's not a waste of time, but try not to bring up work.
Yeah, you know? No, that's no doubt. Like yesterday, man, it was just free-flowing conversation talking about anything and everything, right?
Yeah, exactly. I would employ people not to discuss work.
You know, and that's one thing I got. John Henry Johnson, who I worked with, you know, he told me one time, and he was reporting directly to me, but, you know, he had a really good point and probably some advice to a lot of sales guys, especially because you're always going to have good days, you're going to have bad days, you're going to get in these slumps, you're going to get, you know, things get monotonous, and you get really complacent when oil's good, and then you get when prices are good, and then everything's busy, and you get real complacent when things are slow, like in 2020,
right?
So, you know, moving forward, depending on how the office settings are, but one thing he told me that really stuck with me is, like, when you're having a bad day or having a bad week and you're in a funk and nobody will see you, there's always that one or two customers that will always
be down
to do whatever.
Yeah.
And you need to do it because it kind of resets everything. You have those conversations. You kind of get the blood flowing a little bit.
You feel a little bit productive.
A little more productive. Laugh, cut up, do whatever you do. But there's always lean on those relationships. There's always going to be that customer that you always go to, not even to talk about work, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But if you're ever in those type of situations mentally and not motivated, pick up the phone, call them. Let's go get a bite, go get a beer, whatever.
Get out of the house.
Just get out of the house and just go sit and talk to them, right? And just, it's just really just a mindset more than anything to kind of get you out of that funk.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but I think it's easy to fall in a rut these days.
No, it really is.
Yeah,
it really is.
And that's kind of
really complacent. We've all done it, right? I mean, everybody, if they tell you they haven't, you're lying.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, it's, you know, as a sales guy, when you first get into sales, you do the breakfast runs, and it's easy to be like, I don't have to go there. I don't have to do that. And then you start getting in that kind of complacent Groundhog Day kind of rut where you don't feel like you got to kind of get out of your box or, I'm doing account management. Yeah. I don't need to call on this new customer.
Sure. No doubt.
So, what do you, I mean, I guess with, you know, things are kind of, it feels like the industry's a little more optimistic right now. Yeah. You hear about potential activity coming up and you're seeing this. What's kind of getting you excited about, moving forward? I mean, we got through the shitstorm of last year. Actually, it's been full 12 months since COVID. Right. What are you kind of looking forward to in our industry or just kind of personally, I guess, moving forward?
You know, moving forward, I think, you know, for me is, I kind of have some, I'm not saying I'm concerned, but, obviously
oil, gives you a little
oil
anxiety.
Oil is, there is. Is it going to be this price at the end of the year? I don't know, right? OPEC's got their meeting coming up to see what they're going to do with all their stuff, right? I don't know what day that it may be today, but, or next week maybe. I'm not sure.
Keep chatting. I'm looking it up.
But anyway, I think you get through the first quarter and kind of see what the lay of the land is. But I mean, it's, again, I go back to the overcorrections of our business, right? I mean, still there's 400 drilling rigs running. The growth or the U.S. oil production is not going to be maintained through the drill bit, I don't believe, unless commodities continue to improve.
Okay.
But with that being said, as they continue to improve and rigs are added, drilled and completed, you know, then you kind of create your own demise.
Right.
I hope we're not back to where we were, right? We've got to get a little more disciplined as an industry, I believe, to have a balance.
I kind of feel like
sustained
we are.
Balance, you know?
The conversations, you know, in 20...
But is it part of the inflation piece, though, right? I mean, all things considered.
So I remember 2018, you know, you saw
activity. I don't know. I don't have the answer.
I don't have the answer, but you saw activity, you know, before, you know, operators would carry their rigs, you know, if they had a drilling program for the year till, you know, October, November, you know, then December was kind of regroup and then Q1 again, they could get back out there.
Right.
I think in 2018, operations kind of slowed down from the majority of the customers, probably around August. And you started hearing this conversation, positive cash flow, kind of a buzzword, right, in our industry. And then, from there, you know, we went up and then boom. COVID hit.
Yeah.
All right. Everything crashed. I do feel like these conversations about operating in a profit mentality, you know, this whole flip model, this private equity flip model is kind of over. So you are seeing these new conversations emerge about, so I'm kind of hopeful for that we're not going to go back to kind of shooting ourselves in the foot.
Yeah. I'm hopeful there in that respect. I'm just hopeful that from a service company standpoint, that, man, I'll be honest with you, there hasn't been any consolidation, so to speak, relevant.
Okay.
I mean, the number of consolidation on the service side, I don't believe there's been enough of it. I think most people will probably agree with that. Haven't seen it. I don't know how, you know, I think there's still a lot of people putting pressure on vendors from a rate perspective.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. And that's the thing.
You know, and I may make a lot of operators mad when I say this, but the challenge is, you know, oil goes from... when oil started going the wrong way pretty quick, it took a week to get rate reductions, right?
Oh, yeah.
And
it was
So since the election, oil was $38, I think, the day of the election. Since then, it's up, $20, right? It's 20, as high as 63. And it's difficult to go back the other way, right?
No, that's...
And it's a little bit concerning because there's still... a little bit of heat on the rate side, the pressure.
There is, and I remember in 17, 26, whatever. I mean, everything was cut. 2016, everything was, all the prices were cut. Yeah. You know, flat, drop it 20%, 25%. And then when things start getting picking up and things start getting busier, you're right, those rates never went up. So, I mean, for a company to, and it's like, well, you gave it to me this rate at this one time, but yeah, we're also, through our relationships, doing you a favor, we still need to make profit. We're not
charity.
Well,
and the other thing, it's always just having the right balance of the rates and the wages for your labor force, yeah. right? That's yeah. kind of the problem, because when we came out of the 15, 16, but let's call it 17, come yeah. back, show up back then, well, you still had wages that were still at 14 wages, let's call them 20% higher, yeah. and then you had rates that were still yeah. suppressed, right?
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's just got to, there's got to be a way to balance that out, and it's just tough conversations, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. I'm not sure it ever changes.
But. And no one wants to have those conversations that you kind of need to increase your price.
Yeah, it's tough,
because there's
man.
Fear of losing it to go to a lower
it's
bid.
It's tough. It really is. And I'll be honest with you, I like to, you know, going through those conversations to be very transparent.
Yeah.
I mean, you literally have to spell it out for them.
I mean, you have to be. Otherwise, they're just going to assume that. I mean, you need to have those conversations. Otherwise, they yeah. understand what kind of where you're coming from.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, everybody's got a job to do, right?
Exactly.
I get it. You yeah. know what I mean? And they're never easy conversations. As sales guys, sometimes you know, you just want to get it done and keep the work sometimes, but you still got to be profitable, right?
Yeah.
And that's kind of a big problem we've always had in the industry, where people intentionally putting out work and losing money.
And that just hurts everyone.
Yeah, we've been pretty disciplined where we're at Ranger. So, which is, I feel like it's done pretty well for us. So.
Well, good, man. What else you want to get into?
Man, you tell me, dog.
Man, we're coming up on an hour here of this yeah. this conversation. I know that you and I could probably chat for what's kind of keeping you up or making you wake up in the morning early?
You know, I get up, believe it or not, I get up and go to the gym.
Okay.
I get up about 4 o'clock. I got some getting up early started with the kids, obviously, getting up in the middle of the night, and I've carried that on, get up, go to the gym, whether it's swimming or get on the treadmill, maybe bang some iron or something like all that. Right. You can tell I'm getting a little buff.
I haven't been back to the gym. I mean, the COVID happens, gym's closed, you think, I'll just do a little homework.
One thing I do miss, though, I really do, and I hadn't taken the time to do it because I have the time now to do it, is, you know, I used to do a lot of saltwater fishing growing up, and also, you know, did redfish tournaments, professional redfish tournaments from Texas to Florida, right? The FLW, ESPN, Redfish Cup, all that stuff like that. Did that for about 8 years. But the Texas coast is something near and dear to my heart, and that's always been a passion of mine. That all turned into a job, right? At
yeah.
one time, you know, the tournament trail stuff did. It was an expensive hobby. You can't make. It's not like bass tournaments where you can make a living doing it. So got out of that, forgot about what it was like to fish for fun,
yeah.
you know, and started doing that. And then I've been fortunate to spend a lot of time in Guatemala, actually, on the billfish side of things.
Okay. You
know, Jason Gass, he's yeah, been down there. No, he's familiar.
So a little plug on that.
Andre Futch, all those guys.
Jason Gass puts a great a program on. He came in and we talked about yeah. pretty much the entire time this Texas Billfish Classic, which helps, you know,
yeah, he's done
veterans. Yeah. It sounds like such an awesome tournament.
Yeah, no, it is. In Guatemala, man, that's I tell my wife, I was like, man, I want at least half of my ashes spread over the Pacific Ocean in Guatemala.
That's it?
Yeah. Oh, it's great, man. Sailfish capital of the world. There's nothing like it. Well, it's one of those things you get out there. Your phone's not going to work.
Good.
One.
Good.
But it's one of the things where you can just, when I mean unplug, I mean whether you're catching fish or not, but you're going to catch fish there. But you can literally just unplug, and it's just, I mean, I'm infatuated with water to begin with, okay. right? I've always been love to be on the water, man. There's nothing like it.
You know what, talking about that, I mean, that's interesting, because I know that feeling about, you know, like it's, you're doing something fun, you
yeah.
know, and you're doing something fun, and you're, yeah. oh, customers, oh, doing yeah. something fun, and then eventually you get to a point where you're like, it turns into, the enjoyment's gone.
Yeah.
You know, it's
no,
like,
it turns into a job. Yeah. Like I say on the, when we were fishing all those redfish tournaments for however many years, and we had a lot of success doing it, but it literally just turned into a job.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It was a grind.
Supplies.
It was, it's a grind. Well, you know, if you're going to compete in any of those, you're there for a week at every venue you went to. You're away from home for 7 days. Luckily, I was either working for myself or an employer who helped sponsor or promote that or
right.
allowed
right.
me to do that, you know, 10, 15 weeks out of the year. You know, in a short period of time, we're talking about from March to about September, October.
And that is a grind.
Oh, dude. I mean, it was a grind. It was a lot of fun. It's the competitive drive is what keeps you in it. If you have any taste of success, like I said before, for me, it just feeds feeds the addiction to it, right?
But it's good to take a break from that sometimes. Oh, so to like, you know what, like that's, don't get me wrong, it, and that's a thing, you know, people are like, oh, boo-hoo, like you have to go fish, but you're also not at your house.
You're not living in a hotel. That's right.
And this might be a week for you.
Oh yeah,
this is the fifth week I've done this.
Yeah, you're getting up every morning, you're spending all day on the water, sun's beating you down, wind's beating you up, water's beating
and
you up.
Have to be bullshit, and you gotta be on point.
That's right. And then, you know, I can remember, I don't know when it was, I guess it had been, I don't know what year it was, but I can remember going, we went on a fun trip to Cocoderie, Louisiana, and I remember we were wade fishing, and I was like, golly, we didn't catch anything, and I'm like, this is nice.
Yeah.
This is what it's like to fish for fun.
Enjoy it again.
Oh, yeah. Game changer for me. That's when I said, I'm out of that deal.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing, like, you don't want, I mean, if that's what your enjoyment, you love being on the water, and if it turns into work or something you're kind of dreading, time you need to part, that's when you got to kind of separate and kind of like, I guess, get motivated.
Yeah, get the juices flowing, right? And that's one thing I look forward to with things opening back. I don't know how the customers are going to react as far as their offices are, but I think you'll see a little more uptick of some of that social activity or interaction with your customers face-to-face, I think. I feel like there'll be some of it. It'll probably never get back to what it was. But I feel like it's, talking about getting excited about what's going on in the industry there. I think you have that to look forward to. It may not even be this year, but.
And that's, I mean, honestly.
But it may be next year.
And it's one of those things, like, because everyone has their own, obviously, risk factor when it comes to engaging, sitting around a table with someone or getting in front of someone. Everyone's got their own kind of risk factor and all that stuff. And hopefully, you know, through the vaccine and through, you know, things opening up again. I guess, and hopefully the vaccine kind of, there's enough out there for everyone that wants it, you know, which sounds like there is. So hopefully that kind of reduces the anxiety about actually joining and shaking hands. And it's a weird feeling to be a people person, be an extrovert and get charged up off of people and not shake hands or not share a laugh or share a story.
Or not know if you don't need to fist bump, shake hands,
It's kind of it's a weird feeling.
It's awkward.
Yeah, it is.
It really is.
It is. And but at the same time, you got to be respectful of everyone's risk.
Yeah. Factor. No, that's what it all boils down to. And respect their opinion on how they want to handle it.
Yeah. Like at the end of the day, it's how they want it. I don't give a shit how they want to handle it.
Yeah.
I don't.
No.
It doesn't affect me.
No, I agree.
I'm not going to go home and have a 35-minute heated conversation with my wife about how someone else is handling the pandemic. You know, that's just me, though. There's other shit to talk about.
No, I agree with you, man. I agree with you. But no, it's all good, man. You got to really step back sometime. Unfortunately, it takes events like the Arctic blast here a couple of weeks ago. It really makes you think about, and you get out of it real, you forget about it real quick, though, but it really makes you appreciate a lot of things you have in this life, you know, whether it's your family,
running water,
roof over your head, running water, food on the table, et cetera. It's human nature to kind of, you get back to normal and you kind of slips your memory.
And then you reset to how things were.
Yeah, I wish you could just get to a point where it's just like, keep that same mindset moving forward. And it's hard to do that, you know, and that's one thing I do love about Fort Worth is just the pace of life.
I love
Fort Worth. So different, man. I got the shortest commute of my life.
It's a great city.
Oh man, it really is. You get East 35, it's a little more traffic, but
that Del Frisco's a restaurant.
Double Eagle. Yeah,
It's beautiful.
Yeah,
you kind of feel like walking in with a six shooter and shooting a cowboy on the top of the banister, sit down and get a drink.
Yeah, Funky Town's a good place, man. It doesn't take long to get across town. It's some good people. It's just such a slower pace of life, and I've definitely enjoyed. I miss the people of Houston, but I really don't miss Houston.
My parents
are in Pearland, so I mean, God love them.
Fort Worth is a great place to live. I mean, if I could hang my hat somewhere, that'd be definitely one of them.
Yeah, no, Fort Worth's good.
But that's a good point, though. You know, it's when things kind of go back to whatever it looks like. Yeah, it's one of those things. It's easy to get caught up in your old mentality. Oh, I gotta get back. I mean,
it is,
and you kind of lose focus on what's kind of important or what's keeping you happy. You're always chasing something.
No, there's no doubt, and I feel like I've the goals I've set for myself are somewhat ambitious. Are they realistic? I don't know. We're going to find out. You know what I mean? But you feel like I had drinks with a friend of mine, Bob Ryan, who I worked with, and he's one of, we call him the Renaissance man. Just very well traveled. He's a lawyer.
Okay.
But just very open-minded guy. He's one of those guys that you just absolutely love to sit down and have a drink with. And, he listens. I guess. Yeah. But he's got just such great stories. And it just talking to guys like that just put such a total different view on the world, you know, sometimes. And, man, what a pleasure to be able to just slow things down and not be caught up in what you think.
Think you want.
Yeah, think you want. That or think that's going to make you happy, right?
And that's the thing. I mean, I was talking to – I did this podcast.
I don't mean to interrupt. I was telling him, though, that exact same thing. Like, he's like, you just need to take care of your health, take care of your kids, you know.
Slow down.
Yeah, because, I mean, we were talking about the frustrations of the COVID deal, right, where everything's so restricted. You can't get out and see people customer-wise. Right, he's like, man, don't sweat that stuff.
It's out of your control.
It's going to come. Yeah, it's out of your control. Just do your deal. Don't let it bother you, you know.
And I'm looking forward to things to open because there's a lot of small businesses that have been crushed. You know what I mean?
That's the unfortunate part, right?
And I think I want them. I mean, look, if you want to work, if they require masks, cool. That's great. You know, I mean, if they don't, that's fine too. But at the same time, give them a chance.
Yeah.
Give them a chance. Because I'll tell you one thing, the government's not helping.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. I agree.
Don't get me started on that, buddy.
That's a goat trail
there, buddy. But the thing is, though, I do appreciate because, you know, during COVID, during the quarantine and all that stuff, I mean, people were locked in. Things slowed down. People realized, man, I kind of wanted that title. I was sitting with a customer, and he was very focused on his career, very focused on raises, very focused on title, very focused on next step. I chatted with him. He goes, you know what? I don't even want to go back to the office anymore. I'm kind of
fine. Well, that's
fine.
The whole thing.
I'm kind of fine where I'm at.
Well, it's a quality of life thing. And I can say that for the first time now, granted my kids are 6 and 5, but I always say for the first time in my life, but I'm not traveling 2 or 3 days a week.
Right.
Now that I moved back into the role that I'm in now versus the operations role, you know, this in 2020, I got to wake up and to this day, I get to see my kids every morning.
Right.
I get some days I get to pick them up from school.
Yep.
Or take them to school.
Yep.
And I get to see them every night.
You can't beat that.
I mean, what am I complaining about?
Especially at that age. You know, maybe when they're teenagers, that's when it's like, all right, I got to start traveling again. But I think right now, I mean, it's such a great age to do that.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of times it's like, well, I got to go. I got to go. I got this. I got to go.
You're just chasing the carrot, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
What is it really all for, right?
Exactly.
You know
exactly.
What I mean? So that's all. I've definitely enjoyed that, man. Put a smile on my face. I mean, you've got a daughter. And I've got 2 kids that I know of, so.
I got one that I know of.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, no, man, I appreciate you coming in, kind of sharing your thoughts on kind of your career and kind of the oil field the way it was and kind of, you know, where it needs to go.
Yeah. No.
Oh, you can interrupt.
No,
I interrupt all the time.
I'm a bad interrupter, dog.
Dude, my wife says that about me all the time. She's like, maybe you just let the guests talk a little bit instead of interrupting like you do at the house. Like, I'm like, I interrupt that much? She's like, well, you actually, I do. She's like, you just interrupted me, asshole. So I'm like, all right, got you. I got you.
I'm bad. I apologize.
Oh, I'm horrible at it. No, but you just
did it. Here we go. We're doing it. You did it.
No, but I'm saying I appreciate, you know, you coming in and, you know, you telling us about your career and kind of telling us what kind of where the oil field you believe should be going and kind of just sharing thoughts on just having those relationships, having those conversations, getting in front of people and talk about something besides work, talk about their kids, talk about something, because that's how you build those bonds.
That's right. And that, you know, I was telling you earlier, you know, I tell you that I'm proud for what you're doing, proud of you for what you're doing, because the reality is, you know, there's a lot of different podcasts out there that probably, I mean, they're good. They're informative.
Right.
But sometimes can be taken a little too serious in the conversations, right?
Yeah.
And then everybody is, you know, allowing a guy like me, a sales guy, right, so to speak, or the many other guys that you've brought in here.
Oh, yeah.
That actually give those guys a voice, because you go to most other podcasts, you're not going to see Chief Tozman, VP of Sales,
no,
or whatever.
You CEO know what, this, COO that.
It's, you know what I mean, right? So I think it's a great platform, and that's why I wanted to do it last summer. But, I mean, I think it's a great – kudos to you, man. And it's kind of free-flowing conversation. It's kind of with the hair. You're kind of the Howard Stern of the Oil Field podcast. You know?
Ooh, but it's been
or the
fun.
Joe Rogan's
but
set.
But that's the that's the thing, though. It's been one of those things where it's like, it's just like content. It's just whether it's a social media content or whether it's, you know, a company content or it's whether it's a podcast or whatever. I try to do stuff that I would want to listen to. You know what I mean? And I think, you know, there's some people that do want to listen to the market forecast, the technology stuff, and that's not me, though. You know, that's not my style. I love – everyone's got a story in the oil field. Everyone's got, you know, an outlook. You know, everyone's got opinions. Everyone's – And that's kind of why this started. It's like, man, you and I have spent some great times around customers on the tee box.
Yeah.
We've had some great conversations with our customers around a dinner table.
No doubt.
And it's just one of those things like, well, shit, man, I know that guy. You don't know. Oh, man, he's got a great story. So it's kind of a cool, I guess, platform to have everyone kind of come in and just chime in. Tell them what's
going to. No, it really is, man. I look at the guests that you've had from the early days to where they are now. I've got a lot of good friends.
Yeah.
Frustumers, what you call them. I mean, you know, it's really fun to see because living in Fort Worth, you don't get to see those people, right? Or hear, you know, and talk to them as much. So it's always nice to see that, and happy for a lot of folks that have been able to come on here. Whether it's their own personal brand, regardless of what their intentions are coming on here, you've given them a platform for that. Whether it's me to talk about Ranger Energy Services or whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
But you try to stay relevant is all you can do, you know.
And that's how we've had, you know, J.D. Smith come on and bought a coffee farm in Bolivia.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We talk coffee the whole time. Marshall Brown opened up a coffee shop in Houston. Talk of that. Colton Bingham, who just had that crazy traveling story. We didn't even talk oil and gas.
Right.
You know what I mean? But these are the stories that I want people to hear because it's great industry. It creates great – and that's big to be industry advocates.
Sure.
Like, obviously, we discussed that. It's promoting our industry, promoting the people in our industry as not being this – typecast stereotype that
right.
The narrative is doing. We are your neighbor. We're your community.
Oh, yeah. Everybody's got their own opinion, right? And I mean, just like we talked today, those are my views of the world.
I might not agree with them, but that's cool.
And our industry, and it is what it is, right? But I'm more than willing to listen. Trust me, I'm more than willing to listen to other folks that have a different view of it. Or I sure know there are lots. Some of those guys are a lot smarter than me. I can tell you that.
Yeah.
So. That's another thing in that type of environment is really, you know, watch a lot of news and try to read a lot of the reports that come out. And there's certain people you really put a lot more stock in with what they're saying versus others. So definitely try to be a little more well-read.
Yeah.
I'm not a big book reader, but I'll read industry audio book. Yes.
Man, I'm trying to get into that, dude. That's tough.
Yeah, I hadn't done the audio book.
I tune out.
Yeah, no.
But yet I have a $15 a month subscription to Audible, and I can't cancel. Otherwise, like, what are you, an idiot? You can't listen to a book?
Yeah.
Like, come on, JP.
Yeah. It's not the same.
It's not the same.
It's not the same.
But it's, like, in reality, just like building a sales team or building any type of team, if you surround yourself with the same people that have the same viewpoint that approach a problem the exact same way for example, I think one of the best sales teams is when you got, you know, the guy that knows, you know, the technical sales guy.
Yeah. You got to have them.
And then you got the guy that, oh, man, all I do is, you know, I'll do meetings, do lunches, but I like taking customers fishing or hunting I like doing that. If you surround yourself with the same type of people, you're going to get the same input. You're going to get the same approach to a problem, or you're going to get the same discussions. I think it's important to kind of diversify who you surround yourself with.
Yeah, you just got to know your role and what you're good at, and not be afraid to admit what you're not good at.
Right.
And that's the whole thing. That's what I enjoyed at Ranger, being in that ops role, was I knew what my role was, is to run the business. I let all those superintendents, pushers, that was their deal. I'll listen.
Yeah.
But give them a voice, give them an empowerment to be able to voice their opinion.
And that's big with you, empowerment.
It really is, honestly. Empowerment for those guys to feel like they're part of something bigger.
When did you?
Because they are.
Well,
right?
When did you realize that, I guess, when the importance of it?
It is almost kind of naturally happened sitting around our 7 a.m. meetings talking about what everything was going on every day and where everybody was. And the well service rig business is pretty challenging market as it is.
Right.
And so I'm not a micromanager, but we had to literally go through, and I felt like it paid dividends for us to do that, but it definitely opened up to a lot of other conversations that some challenges we may have been having, but it also let people, you know, we'd be discussing what rig's going here, people, we're going to spend the money, we're not going to spend the money. I knew what my role, I wanted to hear it. I let those guys, you tell me, you're the expert here. You've been doing this, you're 65 years old. You've been doing this a lot longer than I have, right?
Yeah.
So you tell me, and if somebody in the room disagrees with you, then we need to do it right now. Constructively, I mean.
Yes.
You know.
But it allows to have those conversations. Yeah. And sometimes you don't even realize you need these conversations.
Yeah, and that's where kind of we talked about the different layers and that engagement and allowing some of these guys to actually make some decisions, right? But you got to sit in the room with them and help guide them.
Be part of it.
Because if you're going to disagree from a business, you know, a lot of decisions don't make sense or they make sense talking about, but on paper, when it comes down to the numbers, it may not make sense. Right. So you got to do something different, right? And you got to help them understand that, right?
And plus, also, I mean, if you're not engaging with your employees, you're not empowering them, all that stuff, mm-hmm. then you just got people going there, what are they, the Picassos, where they just draw a paycheck.
Yeah.
You know, you want people actually engaged.
No doubt.
With they feel like they're skin in the game. That's and right. be ambassadors for that company.
Yeah, no doubt about it, man.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. I agree. I think the more people know what's going, especially whether you're in the back, accountant, HR, whatever it is, or sales guy, and that's why I say get engaged in the operations too, but you got to really get engaged in the industry that you're in and know what's going on and maybe the challenges that you may face, right?
Right.
Whether it's it's simple as what commodity prices are,
yeah.
right? Versus staring at a computer all day and then
this is my job I got blinders on,
yeah, that's it. Yeah, you know what I mean? But the more they're engaged in knowing how the business is run or what's going on in the industry, you're probably going to get a little more out of them and make them feel a part of that the day-to-day, you know what I mean?
But that's what I mean, I remember in the summer we were doing some podcasts and all this stuff and people were talking, you know, you got to create value and to me you hear that enough, it's like, shit, is that just another buzzword? Is that just another buzz? But that's a real life example on how to create value. I mean, your job might be doing, you know, X, Y, and Z, but man, find out what they're doing in the, you know, over there. Find out what they're doing over there.
No,
talk to them about that.
That's exactly right. And that's kind of why what I did, the approach that I've always taken is whether I had appointments or not, I would always end up back at the office till later in the day, right? And I would end up inserting myself and go sit in their office, the operations guy's office, or be around him when he was on the phone call or on a conference call or something, if he would allow me to come in and listen to some of that stuff. And you're going to learn something. You're going to get engaged in what's really going on versus your only interaction with your customer every day, right?
Right.
And but I think those guys take note of that. It's all about respect in this business, in this world. And again, sometimes your hardest sales are internally.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
they really are.
That's true.
I mean, they really are. So.
I mean, that's a great point.
Yeah, man.
Man, I appreciate you coming in, dude.
It's all good.
Love hearing your outlook. Love hearing your opinion. Wish you were in Houston a lot more. And next time you are, definitely let me know. But, buddy, I appreciate everything, man. And thanks for stopping in. And everyone, thanks for listening to Around the Rotary. And again, Chief Tozen, and he's, find him on LinkedIn. You can connect with him there and shoot him a note. Just find out a little bit more about him. If you want to have a cup of coffee with him, I mean, we're dying to do that.
A cup of coffee, swing some sticks, whatever you want to do.
Whatever you want to do.
Let's do it.
So if people are going to swing sticks with you, I mean, where'd you get your handicap?
The index is like 6.3. I always say, people are like, oh man, you ought to be real good at golf. Well, until I go get a lesson or lessons, you know, you do the same bad habits, have the same bad habits. They don't go away when you go on the driving range, right? Even if you do it every day.
You know, I don't want to get good at golf. This is why, because I truly enjoy being in the last flights of things.
That's where all the real fun is.
That's where the fun's at.
I agree.
That's where the fun's at. All right, buddy. I appreciate you coming in. You have a safe trip back, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, brother.